This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Karitz, and we are coming at you live from the Evolutionary Radio headquarters. As always, I have Steve Smee joining me.
Good evening, gentlemen. How you guys doing? This fine summer day.
We got a really good guest for you guys. Joining us on today's podcast is Ken Skip Hill. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you. This is kind of a new, I haven't done video in a while, so I have to pay attention. And I can't put a rub of Copenhagen in and be spitting and everything, so I'm paying attention.
Don't worry, you're definitely the prettiest of all of us on the podcast. So the first question I have for you, and this is just out of my own curiosity, is where did Skip come from? Like, where did you get that nickname?
I gave it to myself, but I have to explain how it came about. Back during the board era, you know, there was that anonymity. So he came up with some, you know, with dog crap. He wishes he could do that one over again, even though it worked really well for branding. But we came up with these oddball names. Well, what happened was I was in a grocery store and I hadn't been trained for a while. Small town grocery store in a small factory town that I lived in, hadn't been trained. I was given this boohoo part of my life. And I came across a layout of Skip LaCour. And I looked at the picture and from the neck up, I was like, oh my God, like it was some kind of like, oh, revelation, because it looked like me. And there was this uncanny resemblance from the neck up. So it just happened that when I was messing around with the boards, I went with Skip, and it actually started off as Skip LaCour, which is pretty shitty if you think about it. And then I changed it to Skip, and then as I got into prep and everything else, you know, I wanted to make sure that everybody knew who I was. So it just changed over to Ken Skip Hill, but it was because of that resemblance. And if we put up pictures from the neck up again, you would see the same thing. I've had people tell me that for years. Matter of fact, even one of the reasons I changed to Ken Skip Hill was because when I was just Skip, people actually would approach me for prep work thinking I was Skip LaCour. And I thought, well, that's not cool. You know, and I would explain to them and they were like irritated. I'm like, I'm Skip. So I went with Ken Skip Hill. Figured that would eliminate the confusion there. But there's an uncanny resemblance.
I think we had Skip LaCour on, didn't we, Trevor?
Yeah, we had him on about a year ago. He's another really good guy. Your personality is even a little bit similar to his. Like, he's just like a really genuine, good person, like happy to help. Just like a really nice guy.
So he's dealing with a lot of people in the industry, and he's one person that for whatever reason I have never run into, I've never had any conversation with, never a one-on-one or anything, and not even on the boards, or I've had basically zero interaction with him, but I have heard that.
So do you go by Skip usually?
Here's how it goes, because people will come over or they'll meet me like, is it Skip or is it Ken? And I always say, it's Ken. At first, I don't care, for starters, but it's usually Ken if you know me from school, we go way back, your family, your close friend, and if it has anything to do with the industry, it's usually Skip.
Cool. So tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, your age, your stats, where you're from originally, and where you're living now. I heard you're living in Florida now.
I'm in Florida. Old people move to Florida. We were 21 years in Colorado, loved it. Actually, if I'm being honest, I do miss it a little bit, but we love it down here. I think we just got sick of the cold. We were living at 9,000 feet. We had a beautiful home, spent about 2 years up there, and we both looked at each other and went, I don't know, do we really want to do this and die in this house? So my wife got a transfer with their company, real good opportunity, and we came down here. We're in Fort Lauderdale now, but we're both originally from Michigan. Southwest Michigan. I grew up in Battle Creek, cereal capital of the world. And she grew up in a tiny town a little bit northwest of there. And we ran into each other while I was bouncing at a club, a college club. And she was in there underage drinking. I mean, come on. clearly you could see that this was a match made in heaven, and there was 25 years of bliss to follow.
that's a love story.
I know, right?
You don't hear love stories like that anymore.
I always tell my kids, don't count on meeting someone at a bar. This was a very odd situation. And she's awesome. I mean, we have a great marriage. A lot of people close to us will always say, and I'm always flattered, even young clients who come into town, they'll end up leaving and going, you know, I really hope that one day I end up with a relationship like you and your wife has with your family and your kids and everything else. And that's probably the biggest compliment I could ever get, especially from a younger kid.
Yeah, Midwest girls are really cool from my experience. They're really cool chicks. So you're only an hour away from me, by the way. So I can Yeah, I'm in West Palm, a little bit north of you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But if I had it my way, I'd be closer to you, because I'm still single. So from Fort Lauderdale to Miami, single man heaven. There's like 500,000 more single females that are in their 30s and 40s than males. So that's great place for single guy.
Steve, you're single now? When did this happen?
No. Single as in not married.
Oh, but you're still with your girlfriend.
Yeah. But I'm single, not married. So I'm saying if I had it my way, that's where I'd be. But
if you have a girlfriend, you don't see her single, man. If she listens to this podcast, she's, you know.
Clearly she doesn't listen.
No, she already listens to the podcast. Trust me. I get my ass beat on a daily basis because she listens to this podcast. But tell us your stats. What are your stats, age and height, weight, all that good stuff? I'm
48 years old, 5'8". My weight... pre-skip load, if I'm lean, I like to be right in the 205, 210. That's just a good, healthy weight for me. If I'm done skip loading and I get in the gym and I'm full as hell, I'll be closer to 220, a little stronger, a little more full. And then, of course, throughout the week, it, you know, declines from there. But I competed as a light heavy probably 95% of the time. I attempted to compete as a heavy one time. You know, because it's one of those, if I'm a heavyweight, I've arrived sort of thing. And it didn't, it was probably, I was in okay condition, but I wasn't in the condition I was known for. So I liked my look. I really liked being full and big. And with my age, I turn around and my glutes and my lower back and, you know, hips just weren't tight enough. So I was a light heavy. If I ever were able to stay healthy and prep again, it would definitely be the light heavy class.
So Skip, you're very well known on the forums. You know, the forums have kind of died a little bit the last couple of years, which is depressing for me. But how did you get into the forums? How did you get into prep coaching? Like, how did this all start for you?
I stumbled upon the forums just like I think anybody else did. It was early 2000s, or early 2000, probably 2001. And, you know, I was just looking to meet like-minded meatheads like anybody else, really. And I got lucky because I came across a guy named Zilla who was known for what was called shitloading. And I wanted to get back into competing because I had just arrived in Colorado. When I say I had just arrived, I got in Colorado in 97 and I got back to training and everything because I was off for a couple of years. And I started competing in 2001. And started using that shitload method. And then I thought to myself, gosh, you know, this is really good, but I can see where I can tweak it and play with it. And as I did that, I logged a lot of the information that I was doing and I put it out there. I think I have probably put out, if not more free information than the large majority of people, certainly quite a substantial amount. So yeah, I put that information out. People started to pay attention to what I was doing because logically, I think it made sense and that struck a chord with people. And they started contacting me saying, hey, can you help me out? And I remember that I contacted Zilla and I said, hey, couldn't I make a few bucks doing this? Maybe, you know, a little side hustle is kind of how I was looking at it because there weren't any prep guys that were actually making a bunch of money at that time that I was aware of. There weren't very many online prep guys at all. So he's like, yeah, you know, go for it. He was very supportive and publicly, when I say publicly, on the forums, you know, vouched for me and stuff like that. Because remember, the forums back then were very, very anonymous. So who's going to send you money, you know, if they don't know enough about you? So that's when, like I said, I put my name out there more, given, you know, my real name, was talking a lot about my family to help kind of, I don't want to say legitimize, but to just kind of be transparent. And people were, you know, responding that much more by approaching me, figuring, you know, I know this guy and he seems very personable and he seems to know what he's, you know, he's doing in this new method of dieting, I think intrigued a lot of people. There wasn't a lot of cheat meals or, you know, loading or refeed type of dieting at that time. It was, you know, you go through a prep and you beat the shit out of yourself and you get lean. And the only time you ever cheat is if you just fall off the wagon and you just lose it and then you get right back on. So I want to think that I helped. I wasn't the, you know, the only variable, but I want to believe that I kind of helped to transition from what I consider a very antiquated dieting method of just torturing yourself to being able to get into, you know, the refeeds and the skip loading and using cheat meals to really amp up the metabolism. And I think now these days, you guys would probably agree, you'd be hard pressed to find a prep guy who doesn't use some form of that dieting method. And that doesn't mean that they're using skip loading, but they're using some form of cheat meals or high carb meals to be able to offset the metabolism.
You sound like Trevor. That's what Trevor is doing now. He's trying to grow his name and stuff and doing diet coaching. So he's up and coming as well. But were you just doing prep coaching for contest people, or was it just like average Joes on the forums that were like, hey, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to gain, I want to lose, etc.?
It was specifically contest prep at that time. And I loved it until it got to be too much. And by the time I was doing specifically, I'd say probably 90% of the work that I was doing all through, let's see, 2002 until probably 2010, 11, maybe 12. And I started to get, how should I say, sick of the average narcissistic dickhead bodybuilder. And I started pulling away a little bit because it was just, I was getting burnt out on the competitive end of it. There's just a different type of person. And again, I got to be careful because I don't want to make blanket statements and, you know, lump everybody in there. But, you know, a lot of people who compete are, they're different and they're difficult to work with. If, you know, it's one of those situations where if you get them into great shape and they're in better condition than they've ever been in their life, but they take second, that's this giant failure and you're to blame. I've laughed and said, I think I sometimes have been more of an expensive scapegoat than I have an actual prep guy on many occasions, especially when I was working with competitors all the time.
We're kind of stereotyping here, but one thing I've really found with training a competitor versus training an athlete is if that athlete, let's say it's Friday night, he goes out, he cheats on his diet, he has, you know, a couple beers, maybe some wings with the boys, he's going to send you an email and be like, yo, man, I blew my diet. I'm sorry. I'll be back on the diet again tomorrow. You never hear about it again. That competitor will beat themselves up about that cheat meal for 4 months.
Yeah, absolutely. And expect you to make the accommodations with their plan to take care of the mess that they created. That was another issue that I had. I'm like, the plan is working beautifully. You just have to put up with the damage that you created for the next 4 or 5 days, get the water off, and then we can see where you are. I'm not making a change when you went off the rails yesterday. We don't know if it even has any negative impact. Sometimes people can get lucky and they can go crazy for a few hours or a night, and then their progress the next week is great. It actually sometimes can tell me, oh shit, their skip load needs to be bigger than what it is. Because if they're only loading for a few hours and they go off the rails and they come back the next week and progress is great, then I have to look at it and go, well, okay, I got to take something away from this.
So Skip, before we get in depth about the whole skip loading process, because that's something I want to pick your brain on, I'm curious, because this is something me and Steve have talked about a lot off air. Why do you think the forums have really died the last couple of years? And has it changed your business model as a whole?
Yeah, it's incredibly disappointing. I'm going to sound like a real old guy saying that, but the message boards provided so much more interaction and so much more debate and so much more just thoughts and ideas than social media does. Not only that, but you could go back and you could search for those topics. You know, Intense Muscle might be dying or basically dead other than my client forum right now. But there's 14 years of debate and discussion from everyone from Phil Heath to, you know, Mountain Dog was there. God, there's just so many people. David Henry.
Dusty Hanshaw.
Dusty Hanshaw, absolutely. And Shelby, before Shelby even stepped on stage. So Justin Harris. I mean, there's just a long list of people that that was the place to be. And, you know, it is disappointing because social media doesn't allow for those, you know, debates and exchange of ideas. It'd be nice if we could come up with a kind of a combination social media and message board type of, you know, platform, I guess. But I haven't found it yet. And I don't know if that's what's going to happen. But yeah, of course, it changes things. You know, I'm not a big fan of social media. If it wasn't for social media, I would have my personal Facebook page and I would talk about politics and religion and things like that with people that I know. And, you know, we could have a debate, but, you know, sometimes it's quite painful, to be honest with you, dealing with the, you know, Instagram is horrible too. It just, it's a platform that allows people, an awful lot of people who aren't experienced and don't have a lot of knowledge, to be able to make a name for themselves when that would never happen on the boards. Those guys would have been destroyed within 3 days and they'd have left crying. But it doesn't work that way. And everybody's so much nicer on social media. Maybe it's because the anonymity is gone. I don't know. But man, it would get vicious, vicious on the boards. And if someone tried to come in and pretend to be some, I mean, the private investigator work that people would do to be able to run people down was just insane. They didn't last very long. It's just a completely different environment these days. So yeah, I've had to shift gears. I avoided doing it for a little over a year, and I kind of looked at it one day and went, this is potentially business suicide. I have to do this. And I jumped in and learned everything that I could. And you know, I still sometimes get on every day and I think, oh my God, I got to post something. It's just sometimes you feel like you have to come up with material because everybody else is. And I don't think that that's the best way to go about it. But, you know, I'm on there, I think I post about every other day. And I try not to post unless there's something to it, that there's content. I don't like to post just to post, but yeah, it's definitely, definitely a lot different, completely different world.
So why don't we, you know, get into it as far as, you know, your diet, that Trevor was discussing, cause I'm curious to hear. I know, we talked before that you were eating Cheerios post-workout and, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of people struggle, you know, with their diets and stuff, but you're pretty loose as far as cheat meals and stuff based on, you know, the research I've done on you. So tell us a little bit about this diet and what it's all about exactly. I'm not really sure I understand it exactly. Go ahead.
Well, skip loading is basically, it's based on the premise that, and I use this metaphor because I think it explains it very well. It's like you've got this giant pile of wood that you need to burn over a certain amount of time. You start the fire throughout the week, you know, it's going to basically burn down. You may have some embers. It's not burning as hot. So once a week you come in and you throw gas on the fire so that it burns, you're able to throw more wood in there. You're going to burn more wood. The wood being the body fat, the gas being the carbs. Carbs work to fuel the metabolism in a way that once you start to get depleted throughout the week, and it doesn't have to be a week, I use a week because the large majority of people can skip load through a cycle that's roughly 7 days. There are some people that need to go longer. There are some people with ridiculous metabolisms that can go shorter. But basically what you're doing is you're depleting throughout the week, you're getting leaner. And then when you stagnate or you get below what I call baseline, and baseline is the previous week's weight. So as an example, if you hit, you lost 2 pounds and you hit 200 pounds before your skip load last week, you skip load, you come into the diet the next week and you get down to 198, then that means that you're 2 pounds below baseline. So if you're progressing at roughly 1 to 2 pounds below baseline weekly, then you're going to continue to skip load weekly, but we're also going to try to build that skip load, because I try to get the skip load as big or as long as I can because it provides that much more fuel for the metabolism. So as an example, you know, to set up a skip load, I do it by hours. I used to do it by meals, but if I said 3 meals, I would get people that would just go crazy with this massive meal at 9 o'clock in the morning and then not eat again until 4 in the afternoon. And they were stretching this time period out that wasn't working. So I changed over to hours. So as an example, I may start someone or a new client, you know, 3 or 4 hours, see how they respond. If they get below baseline, and especially if they were to lose 2 or 3 pounds or even more, then we can take, there's other factors. You know, I have to take into consideration what's happening with their strength during the week, their energy levels, their hunger, things like that. But all things put together, I try to increase incrementally that skip load as much as possible, because again, it's just gas on a fire. And those types of foods need to be very, very fast carbs. So I always say it's usually traditional skip loading is low fat and processed carbs, because they're the ones that are going to hit your bloodstream like a bullet, and they're going to be packed away much more efficiently as glycogen when you're depleted. Now there's other, you know, I have used, and I do with myself, more of a moderate fat, moderate carb version, but that's a different animal. And it would take me a while to explain the differences, which I'd be happy to do. But basically traditional skip loading is that high carb, low fat, you're just packing away carbs as quickly and efficiently as you can and taking advantage of your body's own endogenous insulin response. And it just packs them away. And it's usually a weekly cycle.
So it's basically a low calorie diet 6 days of the week. And then you have 1 day of the week where you have a very high carb refeed.
Exactly.
You use primarily processed carbs because those are going to give you the highest insulin response.
Right. Exactly. Yep. Now the cereal comes into play because I still will keep carbs post-workout, and I feel that they need to be processed and low fat too, because that's just your window. You know, you're still trying to quickly shuttle nutrients post-workout. So, you know, protein powder, and I mean, my go-to is, I always tell people, use cereal, because cereal is a good combination of just basically sugar and rice. And I try to put some parameters around it. As an example, I'm not big on corn. I will sometimes get people who will say things like, you know, well, I'm gluten intolerant, stuff like that. So I do try to stay with more rice-based cereals. I use Cheerios because I don't have any issues with Cheerios. It's just kind of a preference of mine. But by and large, I have them stick with like Rice Chex and stuff. And there's plenty of different flavors, and they can play around and kind of get, you know, it's a little bit of a side benefit to have a little something tasty post-workout that it's not there because it tastes good, but it's a nice little side benefit so that you can get your fast carbs, quick nutrients post-workout, take advantage of that window, and then move on back to basically just your regular diet.
It's kind of like a more fun way of using a carbohydrate powder post-workout.
That's about the best way to put it. I always say you want to eat something tasty like cereal, you want to drink dextrose or waxy maize. It tastes like shit. And we can put them both on paper, and we can, you know, sit there and say, well, this one is supposed to do this, and it's supposed to be so much better. But if you really were to take both of those throughout the course of, say, a year, I can't honestly say that there would be any quantitative or any difference between the two over the course of a year. And if that's the case, look, I've always said, if you're not going to get much of a response out of something, don't bother with it. I'm not that person that says, if you take, you know, 0.1 of 1%, but you do that 10 times, then you'll have, you know, 0.5%. And that adds up over 10 years. I don't look at things like that. I look at things that if they are significant enough to make an impact, great. It's how I look at things like creatine. I think creatine personally is just a waste of shit. I get supplements for free and I still don't use creatine. So I'm not a big fan of it. I don't think it does much other than put a little extra water on you, gives you a little leverage, and you might get 10 pounds more on your bench press. Then you have someone else who will argue, well, if I do that and I do that week in, week out over months for, you know, 3 years, then maybe, okay, if that's how you look at it. I don't look at it that way. I don't approach it that way. I do the things that I feel are significant and that will actually really work. And the other shit, I throw to the side. I try to keep things very, very simple and not try to complicate stuff.
So Skip, one of our listeners, they submitted a listener question for you, and they want to know, when you're using these highly processed carbs, whether it be post-workout or during the skip load, are you using things like metformin or insulin?
No. Now, when I say no, I say the large majority of people don't have to. I went years without using it. I do have clients who will use insulin. I have myself. I'm not a huge fan of metformin personally. Insulin can help. Insulin helps when you're really depleted and you really need to pack away arguably more carbs than your endogenous insulin can handle. So instead of going, you know, hyperglycemic and having blurred vision and that sort of thing, or having to cut back on the amount of carbs that you're taking in because your body just can't handle it, that's where insulin can come into play, and it can make the process much more efficient, and you can get a lot more carbs in you in the same time frame. Insulin works real well too, loading for the last load prior to a show. So there are times that it can be used and it can be very effective. But I went years without using insulin myself or with my clients, and it just worked. You know, skip loading still worked incredibly well. So, and again, metformin, I'm not against the use. I think it's kind of overrated. I kind of want to just go to insulin if I need something. You know, I'm not big on GDAs either. You know, just regular off-the-shelf GDAs. I just feel like, you know, if you want to get it done and you're having a hard time putting away carbs, go straight to insulin. I don't want to sound, you know, like a drug guy, because anybody who knows me knows that that's really not the case. But again, I go with what works. It's the question that I get sometimes. It's very similar. Growth hormone or peptides. I'm not big on peptides. Well, other than melanotan. If you have the choice of doing the two, go with GH. It's the long standing, we know the sides, we know much more about it, and you don't have to sit there seven times a day and, you know, time it and do all this where you're going to end up spending roughly the same amount of money by the time you're done anyway.
I know Steve wants to chime in here, but I actually don't mind metformin. But do you know what the number one problem with it is?
Diarrhea.
It gives me the fits. Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Exactly. About 2 weeks. Usually, for the large majority of people, once you get past that 2-week threshold, most people can begin to tolerate it much better. I do like the health aspects of it. I mean, if you're able to use it low dose and, you know, you're more concerned about health and things like that. I mean, we do know that fluctuating, you know, blood sugar levels and things like that aren't hugely healthy over time. Now, I use myself as an example. I've skip loaded, you know, for what, 15, 18 years now, and I don't have any blood markers that say that there are any issues. And I haven't had any clients who have either. But that doesn't mean that when you look at it on paper, that doing loading and high amounts of carbohydrates for years, even without insulin or anything else, is terribly healthy. Now, it isn't that the sport is healthy anyway, because we're, you know, most of us are doing other things that aren't considered terribly healthy either. But I do think and always want to promote people doing things as healthy as they can, and to have an awareness of what they're doing. And when they're making the decision to do something, whether it be skip loading or using insulin or using gear or any other compound, to be well-informed and to be able to make a decision that if they were to have problems later, that they don't say, oh, well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that it was going to do that. That would be horrible. At least if something happens, you knew what the consequences could be, and it still sucks if you have problems, but at least you knew.
So Trevor wants me to ask you a question here. He wants to know, what are the mistakes people make on a fat loss diet? I don't know why he wanted me to ask you that.
But, I was hoping it was a cat question.
He wanted me. I have some questions on my own, but
I'm the only one talking.
No, I was going to ask questions, but I'm going to let you guys talk. I'm not.
Yeah, do you mean as far as the client making mistakes? And I apologize. I've got a pretty bad. You can probably hear my voice cracking and everything else. I think it's my sexier radio voice. Maybe it's better this way.
Kind of raspy. My voice is messed up too. I blew chunks last night. I don't know. So I had like a really bad migraine out of nowhere, and I just threw up. I think spending 6 hours at the beach yesterday probably did that.
That can do it.
So no, what I wanted to know, Skip, is like, you've worked with thousands of competitors, right? Right. And generally what I do is when a competitor comes to me, before I give them their program, I ask, what have they done in the past? And what I wanted to know is, what are some of the common reoccurring mistakes you see competitors make time after time after time?
Typically, it's just too low calorie. And it's twofold. They either jump to ridiculously low calories too quickly, or they just end up in what I call the basement. And the basement basically means you have a ceiling and you have a basement. And the ceiling to me means that if you're closer to the ceiling, you have a lot of options. You're doing low cardio, you're taking in a good amount of calories, you're not training too frequently, that sort of thing. As you start to train more frequently, you do more cardio, your calories come down, that drops, and you start to get closer to the basement. And when you're in the basement, and you're basically at zero, that's when you're at the mercy of, gosh, I sure hope my body continues to progress, because you don't have any room for any other changes. You can't handle more cardio because you're doing as much as you can possibly do. And when I say you're doing as much as you can possibly do, you might even be going hypo, 45 minutes into a cardio session. That right there will tell you that you can't function on more cardio. Your calories are too damn low. Your strength is in the toilet. You're not getting a pump. You could potentially get sick because your immune system goes in the crapper during situations like that too. So usually when people come to me, the biggest mistakes that I have seen, and I don't think it's even male or female. I think that just the biggest mistakes with both men and women is when they go to cut, they end up with too low of calories. People aren't very patient, and they're not able to read the signs and be patient enough to wait and see how their body responds. And it's the exact same way when you have someone come to you or come to me for off-season work as far as bulking. They just get fat as hell. Oh, yeah, I was strong and everything else. And then, I realize that I have too much body. Yeah, you're eating like fucking crazy. I think people tend to think that they need more calories to build muscle than they actually do. You can stay relatively lean and build, but you may not be shredded. You're not going to be 8 pounds above contest weight, but you can stay in pretty damn good shape and make real good gains if you're very structured and just very consistent with your diet. And most people aren't. They got to have a weekend with the boys, and a weekend with the boys is cool, but then a weekend with your girl, and then your parents come into town, and it all adds up. And those types of situations don't allow people to stay lean and to stay in really good condition.
So I'm definitely agreeing with you on the calorie thing. I think it's funny because Americans, we've tried every diet the past 20 or 30 years, and it's all like low calorie, low carb.
and we keep getting fatter. It's not working.
Right.
But everyone wants to count calories. Like you have the Weight Watcher. I had an ex-girlfriend. She did the whole Weight Watcher thing. It's all counting calories. And she couldn't lose weight because she was drinking diet soda all day. Diet soda has zero calories. She's not losing weight. Well, she's getting low calories. It's not working. And it's like, you know, we keep doing the wrong thing. My only playing devil's advocate, though, with this diet that you're promoting here is that won't it work? I think it'd work perfectly if you already have low body fat. But if someone's overweight, like fat, which is like half of the country, is 30% body fat or more, wouldn't it kind of make them spin their wheels if they're going to kind of like eat good for 6 days and splurge one day a week?
It's a very good question. One of the first things that come to mind is when you're heavier, the term hyperinsulinemic comes to mind, because higher body fat levels tend to make people not respond terribly well to carbohydrate and insulin. However, what I have found, surprisingly, to be honest with you, is as long as you are depleting. Now, let me just say this before so that I don't forget about this. I can't take on a client who's heavy and they diet for 6 days and then they start skip loading. You have to get to the point. There has to be 2 or 3 weeks there before you can start to skip load, because you have to find out. And I have to know that person is depleting of glycogen. If they're not depleting, then that's why society is fat, because they're eating the shitty carbohydrates and they have no use for them. If they were an athlete, if they were a bodybuilder and they were depleting glycogen, they could get away with eating shitty carbs because their body would have a use for them. So that client or that person has to be getting glycogen depleted or it's not going to be effective. So the other thing that concerns me, it doesn't concern me as much now because I have, you know, established the dieting protocol, you know, for years, but in the early years, it always bothered me because I was worried that it would look like it was kind of a, like a fad type, phase type diet, because diet methods come and go with the mainstream public. They may not as much in our industry, because of course we're evaluating things all the time as to whether they're effective or not, but you know, that happens in the mainstream. So what I did was I was careful to make sure that if people would come to me as clients and they wanted to diet, but they didn't have anything to do with the bodybuilding industry, I was careful with that, because skip loading, again, I didn't want it to take on this kind of bullshit type of, you know, I was trying to keep the integrity of the shit that I had done to figure out how well this worked and why it worked, and proving that it worked for so long that I didn't want to blow that. It was a big concern of mine. It isn't as much now, like I say, because it's well established. I mean, shit, I've been doing skip loading. I mean, I think I put it out there, you know, it's 2001, 2002. I mean, that's a pretty good amount of time. The large majority of people in the industry, especially all the top prep guys and everything else, they all know about it. And they may use, like I said, some form of refeeding, or they're not obviously going to call it skip loading, and they have their own kind of, you know, spin on it that, you know, they may do something differently, but it's kind of all the same shit. And I didn't invent it. Listen, I got to be clear on this. You know, before there was skip loading, there was Zilla's shit loading. Before that, there was Body Opus, apparently. And I didn't even know about Body Opus, the Dan Duchesne thing, where you would diet Monday through Friday, and then for like 2 days you would, you know, eat all these massive calories, and it was a very similar thing. You know, I'm not inventing anything here. Maybe it's reinventing the wheel. I could be accused of that too, I guess. But like I said, I came to this method. I put it out there. I put a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of people. There's thousands, probably more people who have used it successfully than even people who have worked with me, because I have put it out there for so long.
I agree completely with what you're saying. Like, for the most part, I'm kind of like a carb cycling guy. Like, with most of my clients, they'll utilize carb cycling. I did not invent carb cycling. I mean, Justin Harris has been doing this forever. Shelby Starnes has been doing this forever. I mean, before them, there's probably people recommending carb cycling. If you look at like the Body Opus diet, which is basically keto 5 days a week and then 2 days of a carb refeed, that's kind of carb cycling if you think about it. I mean, like these are all ideas people have had before us. We're kind of just like putting our own unique spin on it.
Right. I agree. Yeah. And it's funny because people would say to me, well, you don't believe in carb cycling. And for a little while I said, no, I really don't. And then I thought about it and I came up with it. I'm like, wait a minute. It really is technically a carb cycle. Plus, I do tend to lower carbohydrate intake on non-training days versus training days too. So there's a little bit of a cycle. It's just not this high, low, medium, you know, medium, low type of way to look at it. And I think that that is how I perceived carb cycling when I was being asked that, saying, no, that, you know, I'm not carb cycling. And then it occurred to me, well, it's kind of still carb cycling. It's just more of a six. I mean, you know, I've had people, I've done it myself. I've played with this. I ended up playing with this too much during my last prep that I just had to pull out of. There, I would load for two and a half days, and it was working beautifully. But yet I was getting too depleted to make that loading effective that it was counterproductive. So, you know, I've been doing this a long time. And one of my biggest drawbacks, I guess, or negatives is, I just want to continue to learn as much as I can. And I, as effective as my method is, and I could easily leave it alone, I know there's more to it that I can learn and I can figure out. And in the process, I get to fuck my prep all up. But so that's the nature of the beast.
So I kind of want to get into, because people are listening to this, and I think we had a guest like a year ago who talked about this, one of Skip LaFleur's guys, whatever, and he said he ate 12,000 calories on his cheat day.
It was Scott Abel. It was Coach Scott Abel.
And my concern with that was if someone like me were to eat 12,000 calories in one day, I would probably get sick doing that. I actually know I would get sick off of that because it would destroy my stomach. So how would someone be able to execute this type of diet? Basically without destroying your stomach in the process on that cheat day?
Well, 12,000 calories is incredibly excessive. I would say this, at least speaking for skip loading, I can't speak for Scott Abel or anybody else who does any other type of, you know, loading or fat loading or anything like that. But, you know, if I have a client get to 10 to 12,000 calories, he's one out of, you know, 150 or 200 people. That doesn't happen very often.
Okay. So during the week, you know, can you give us an idea, like say, you know, so Sunday's your cheat day. So let's say the next day, Monday, what would be a typical diet for someone like you? And you said in the beginning of the show, you weighed in the low 200. So what would be a typical day's diet? If you could kind of explain that. So you're kind of in a deficit every day, pretty much.
Yeah, you're during the week, you're going to end up depleting. You're going to benefit from the load for a couple days to have increased fullness and increased strength, but it's going to come, you know, it's going to decrease quickly. Usually in 2 or 3 days, you're going to baseline. So you're going to hit that previous week's weight, and then the last part of the week, you're going to drop underneath that weight. So once you get to that weight, anything underneath that, you know, you're going flat, your workouts aren't going to be as good, you know, that sort of thing. Hunger is going to be up, energy is going to be down, cardio is going to be a bitch. So the regular diet, as an example, and I mean, it changes throughout the course of, you know, a prep, but just to give you some idea, you know, I could say a month ago, I was at roughly 330 grams of protein a day, about 60 grams or 70 grams of fat, and almost zero carbs. That's something that I did this go round, but I have not done in the past. I have always had carbs in my diets for all of my preps. It was just something that I wanted to try different, and I found it to be not very productive. So the other question that I get a lot too, that I want to make, that I want to be clear on, is a lot of people think, well, if you're depleting because you're skip loading, you can't have any carbs, and that's not true. That depends on metabolism. I've had people who will run 300 or 400 grams of carbs a day. I mean, back in the early 2000s, when I was prepping and I actually had a job where I had to move and I was younger, versus now where I just sit here and my idea of cardio is going to the post office or the grocery store, my metabolism is in quite a different position. Not only am I older, but I just don't move much. So I could get away with 300 grams of carbs, and then the next day I would cut it to 250, and then I might go back up to 3 if my weight was falling too quickly. You can still deplete glycogen while taking in carbohydrates. It's a huge misnomer, I guess, to think that you have to be zero carb or incredibly low carbohydrate to get depleted. You just need to be below the amount of carbs that it takes to start depleting glycogen. And a lot of that has to do with metabolism. It has to do with how you train, high volume training versus, say, DC training. Your carb intake is going to have to be different if you're on a very low frequency, very low volume training style versus high frequency and higher volume. So there's a lot of variables. But again, you know, my diet would be, or was, as an example, last month, very low carb. Even post-workout, I wasn't doing carbs. So I was getting very depleted by midweek, and at the same time was getting very lean, and then was coming into the weekend and sometimes would push to 10 days. And then I would have to have this day and a half skip load, because sometimes at one day I wouldn't fill out, but maybe 60 or 70%. I wasn't getting much out of it. I might actually only gain 2 or 3 pounds. 2 or 3 pounds is just not much based on my experience, because I've loaded so much. I need to get up there. It's almost a fill and spill. I don't know if you've heard Mountain Dog refer to that term, fill and spill. That is, he got that term from me, because that's how you want to load, not only for dieting, but you want to load that way prior to a show so that you know you're full enough, and then you come back and clean up the water afterwards and then get on stage.
This sounds very reasonable, but it sounds like the homeostasis. You have to get to a homeostasis point, and then you can kind of utilize this diet. So is that accurate? Or because you said earlier, someone that's fat has to get to that certain level, but like a lot of people are probably listening to this who are overweight, and they're like, you know, I want to do this. And I could see this definitely working for someone like me or someone like Trevor. But like you said earlier, I just want to confirm that you have to reach that homeostasis for a period of time before you start implementing this, correct? Am I inaccurate on that?
No, you have to get to the point where you're depleted. If you're not depleted of glycogen, it isn't going to work. So as an example, if you're just a sedentary person who maybe does a little bit of cardio, it's probably not going to be terribly effective for you. It could be if it was framed and structured correctly, but by and large, you need to be depleting glycogen. And to do that, you need to basically be weight training. You need to be bodybuilding in some form or weight training to deplete the glycogen. So yeah, it only takes, I mean, it doesn't take that long unless your calories are just too high for your regular diet during the week, but it should only take 2, maybe 3 weeks, and you should get to the point where you can begin a small time frame of skip loading to see how you respond. But it always takes a couple weeks anyway, as a prep guy or a nutritionist, to be able to see how someone is responding. You know, to just, you know, throw a skip load at someone a week in, or maybe even 2 weeks in, if you don't know how they're responding, is kind of irresponsible. It can be a waste of time. If they're not depleted, then you're going to be throwing food at them that really wouldn't be any different than them going out with the girls or the guys and blowing off 3-4 hours. It's just not going to be very effective. And, you know, you don't want your client to spend 2 weeks while you're analyzing, you know, a week or two, analyzing how they're responding to their diet and send them out to eat, and then go, oh shit, I guess that was too many calories and they're not depleted yet. So that was a waste of time. You got to be careful with it. And I try to remind people, even when they come, sometimes I get somebody who will come to me and they'll say, oh, you know, I've researched the skip loading. I'm really excited about it and everything else. And, you know, that's how I want to diet. And then they're surprised when they have to wait 3 weeks before their first skip load. And I have to go back and explain, well, you know, it's just not going to be effective. You don't just jump in and start eating high carb. You have to get to this point where the body has a use for them.
And then that 3 weeks that they have to wait, what are they doing during those 3 weeks? Are they just eating what you would normally eat during the skip load for the 6 days and exercising?
Yeah, you're eating the regular diet, which typically when I start a client out on a plan anyway, their calories are higher. I'm always careful to make sure that I don't start with a client and squash their metabolism right from the start. So I tend to start a little bit higher with calories, and then I can see from there how they respond, and I can drop them down if I need to. And then again, in that 2 to 3 week range is when I know that I've got or feel comfortable enough that I've got the calories set for the regular diet where they need to be to get them depleting, but not losing too quickly. And then we can start implementing the skip loading.
Steve, you have any more questions? Because I got one more listener question.
My question is, I guess like we can go to your Instagram page and kind of look at some of the things, because I noticed that you have some really delicious looking things on there. So is that kind of where guys can go who are listening to this to get ideas of what they're going to be eating on there?
You know, I'll tell you what, it's a little misleading. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I respond very well to higher fat and higher carb, where the large majority of people respond better to higher carb and lower fat. It's just a difference. I had come into a prep in 2012 and I found myself hyperglycemic from all the carbs. I thought to myself, what the hell am I going to do? So I started playing around with the higher fat intake. So you can get an idea there. It would be better to go to Intense Muscle, because there's like 100,000 response to a thread there that is skip loading. I don't want to say alternatives, something to that effect, those skip loading foods or approved skip loading foods, something like that. Those are much better examples than my own Instagram, because I'm a foodie. Okay. I'm not chasing a pro card anymore. Now when I'm prepping, you know, I'm on it and that sort of thing, but I'm a foodie. So I'm looking for, you know, the things that I eat when I cheat, they're a little more decadent than what clients are going to be able to get usually.
So Skip, for our last question to finish off the show, we had a listener question. It's well known that you recommend skip loading for pre-contest. He wants to know, what's your approach for the off season? So let's say someone hires you for 20 weeks. You guys do a 16-week contest prep. How would you get out of that contest prep and then venture into the off season?
Is this question specific to skip loading or just in general?
Just in general.
Okay. I hate the term reverse dieting, and there's some personal reasons why.
I hate it too, but it actually does have merit.
It does. I agree. There's personal with someone who has stolen a lot of shit from me, and that term may not have originated with him, but he made it quite
popular. Does his name start with an L?
No.
Oh, I was gonna think it was Lane Norton.
No, Lane and I have always gotten along well. We don't always agree, but we're both from the boards, and we've had pretty solid debates. But him and I have always been not on the same page, but we've always been respectful. And I think that he would probably say the same thing. He's a good dude. Not everybody likes the guy, but I've always gotten along with him well. I'll tell you off when we get off who it is, though.
what I like about Lane Norton is, he will disagree with you, but still be pleasant, right? Like, he will argue with you, but he's arguing at your ideas. He's not arguing with you as a person.
Right. And it depends how you approach him, though, with the debate and the argument and things like that. If you're respectful and understand that, you know, this guy is well-versed on a lot of shit, you'll get a good debate out of him. You'll get a good response. You come at him all dickheaded, he can throw it down like the old school message boards. So good for him. I think he's cool. A lot of people I know don't like him, but it is what it is. You know, everybody's got their thing. So
I think where he's going to come on later this month, actually.
Is that right? Yeah, I haven't had much interaction with them on social media. We don't follow. We don't run for some reason in the same circles. I don't know why. But since the boards kind of ended, I haven't had much, you know, much interaction or know much about what he's doing. But I've never had a problem with the guy. I think he's pretty straight up dude. So that's just my take. But coming off of a prep and stuff like that. Look, I'm a big proponent of you know, being healthy and staying lean. And I don't think that you need to turn into a fat slob to make quality, you know, or big gains for that matter. So you're not going to stay shredded. You're not going to stay 5 to 7 pounds above, you know, your contest weight, but you still need to be healthy. And it becomes a digestion issue too. If you just start cramming food down your pie hole, it becomes an efficiency issue where, you know, digestion becomes an issue, distension. I mean, you could go so far as to say that there have been some lower back injuries caused by eating too much and being distended and, you know, coming out of the hole squatting or pulling deads and, you know, your lower back is leveraged against all the food in your gut. You know, that there's merit there. So it's just a healthier way. The reverse dieting, again, I don't like the label, but you have to be careful with it. You can't go, you know, you can't be too aggressive, but at the same time, there has to be balance there because you also don't want to come off of a show too slow. Metabolically, people tend to, for the most part, respond to increased caloric intake for the first 3 to 5 weeks relatively well, unless it's just incredibly excessive. And metabolism will most times adjust to pretty good increases in calories. You know, sometimes 600-700, you know, calories, the metabolism is just, you know, your body's starving and it wants to suck those nutrients up. But you got to be careful because I always laugh and say, most people think they get fat in one day. They wake up and they go, oh shit, I'm fat. But you've been getting fat. You just haven't noticed it. So you have to have a good eye to be able to see, engage what's going on and not trick yourself into thinking this is just hot muscle. You know, I'm just gaining all this muscle. This is the anabolic window. And oops, I woke up this morning, I'm a fat ass. So you have to be careful with that. Skip loading when it goes into off season. I used to be a bigger supporter of it than I am now. I think I have done it for so long with so many people that I see that it is nowhere near as beneficial as I thought it was early on. So I would say, it could certainly help, but I don't think anything more than a cheat meal here or there. I tend to keep skip load meals in the off season for people who are growing very much more limited to balance. Like, as an example, things like sushi and, you know, steak and loaded baked potatoes and things of that nature versus forcing carbs. Now, if I have someone with a fast metabolism who's relatively lean and they're struggling to gain weight, that's a different story. But those genetic freaks aren't, you know, the rest of us, and they don't happen very often. They can be fun to work with, but
from a science standpoint, everything you said is dead on, right? If you're eating in a calorie deficit, then you do want to have a refeed day, you know, periodically, whether it be once a week or whatever, to reset leptin levels, make sure the metabolism, the thyroid is firing on all cylinders. But if you're eating at caloric maintenance or caloric surplus, you don't need that because your leptin levels and everything, they're going to be optimized because you're giving your body all the calories it needs.
Exactly.
But yeah, like in the off-season approach, a cheat meal is more like just to be social. It's like, hey, Friday night, go out for a date night with your girlfriend, have some sushi, whatever, right? It's right. Not really needed in order to make progress.
Now you could, and this would take too long to get into, but I am playing with and have been for about a year and a half where off-season protocol is actually slightly below maintenance. And then there is a skip load involved with higher carb and higher calorie. And I almost, and this is a simplified way to explain it, so bear with me, but it's almost as if you're slightly getting leaner throughout the week, and then you take in those calories over the weekend, and you pack them away, and you use insulin, or the SCGS compound, however you want to go about it, but, and then you kind of grow, for the day or two that you're loading. And I have had a handful of clients who have begged me, and I usually don't do things with clients unless I have done it enough with myself that I feel confident enough that it's largely going to be relatively successful with other people. But when, you know, I put something out there, an idea out there, and someone is begging me, you know, I tell them, hey, you know, I'm not sure of the results, but if you want to give it a shot, cool. And I've had the majority of those people respond very well to this. So there's more there. Like I said, I could talk about it and go into it more, but we don't really have the time. And I need to give it more time to be able to see how it works. But there's something there with keeping those calories slightly below maintenance, which you'd think would be counterintuitive. But yet, then you get that surge over the, you know, the weekend or for a day, day and a half, sometimes 2 days. And there's growth there without, you know, putting body fat levels at risk. It's pretty intriguing. Maybe have me on in another year or 6 months or something, and we can get into it.
I'll hold you to it. What I think that diet style would be really good for would be recomping, you know, building muscle and fat at the same time. So skip for our listeners.
It's the best of the world. I mean, that's the best of both worlds right there. Anytime you can recomp, that's a beautiful thing.
Bro, that's like having pizza and sushi for dinner.
Exactly.
So for our listeners who want to learn more about your contest prep methods, maybe hire you for your services, what would be the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Teamskip.com. They can always email me at teamskip@intensemuscle.com. But, you know, Intense Muscle on Instagram. I write for Elite FTS. I have my coach logs there, and I'm a columnist there. So I'm out there. Quick Google of Team Skip, and I'm pretty easy to find.
Guys, Skip is someone who's been in the industry a long time. He's a smart guy, and he has the real-world knowledge to back it up. I really recommend following him. He's a good guy. He puts out lots of really good information. He likes cats, though, so don't be scared of the occasional cat photo here and there. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for our special guest, Ken Skip Hill, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm.